Thank you everyone for coming today. I'm quite excited to be here, and I'm quite surprised to see so a large audience, and so I'm very happy, and I think Steve Ballmer would be happy too to see so a lot of people here for the launch of Bistro 7 2009. And so let me introduce myself. I'm Paolo Salvatori. I'm the Bistro Ranger for EMEA. I have been working in Microsoft since 1997, so a lot of time. I spend most of this time in Microsoft services as a consultant, as an architect. So in the past, I had the chance to personally design and implement very complex solutions with Bistro 7 2004, 2006, and in the future, I hope, with Bistro 2009. And so today we are going to, oh, maybe someone forgot to mention that the rest of the session is going to be in Italian. No? Okay. Yeah, there's a person, it's surprising, but there's a person here in this room that would be able to understand. So, no, I'm joking, obviously. Bistro Performance Tuning is something that is considered in the field like a sort of black art, if you like, more than a science. Indeed, I can say by experience that it's a sort of ongoing process, because seriously, I cannot say that I know the entire product. Okay, I've been working with Bistro for a lot of years, but trust me, every day when I go on the blogs, I always find new stuff. Okay, and you will see in a moment that optimizing a Bistro application means to tune the entire platform from the ground up. So you need a lot of expertise, not just Bistro experts. You will see that in a moment. You need SQL experts, IIS experts, and so forth, okay? So what I have found over time is that by following a methodology that is consistent, repeatable, and reusable, you can guarantee and make sure that you can successfully accomplish a performance lab. For this reason, my team, the Bistro Customer Advisory Team, decided also to create some guides, like, for example, the Bistro Optimization Performance Guide, because we wanted to provide to everyone our learnings and to empower everyone to be able to conduct a performance lab successfully. Okay. So, in this slide, you can find some of the groups inside the Connected Systems Division, which is the group inside Microsoft, which is responsible for Bistro Server and OS Integration Server and the .NET Framework. In particular, I'm a member of the Customer Advisory Team, and what you can see inside the red frame are the services that we provide. So the first categories are reactive services when, for example, a customer has a major problem, a critical situation. Or we also provide proactive services. So we provide architecture design reviews, operational readiness reviews, and performance and stability review, or if you prefer, performance labs. Okay. So we collaborate with a lot of subjects and actors, if you like. So we usually collaborate with MCS. You can see also a brochure, or you found a brochure on your seat. And we collaborate with PFE a lot. We'll talk about this stuff later on during the presentation. We collaborate with partners and Virtual TS. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Microsoft also announced its decision to merge our division, that is a Connected Systems Division, with the SQL Server Division, which is called something like Data and Storage, Business, Wherever Group. Okay. Now, so in a few words, the news is that Microsoft decided to create a single division, which will be called Business Platform Division. And so SQL Server and Bistro now are part of the same division. I feel this like a great opportunity for both teams, SQL Server and Bistro, to work in close contact and to collaborate in order to create the new line of business products in the future. So I think it's a great news. So this is the agenda for the session. We are going to talk briefly about some technical stuff. Since you had this meeting of the user group, I decided not to overlap, okay? So I minimize the technical footprint, okay? So I will spend more time talking about the methodology that we use when conducting a performance lab. And as you see in my agenda, in the last part of the session, we are going also to see some, let's say, preliminary results, okay, of the performance lab that we made in January, in order to compare the performance of Bistro 7 2009 beta version with Bistro 7 2006 R2. Okay. So, when I think about how our customers have designed and implemented their solution based on the Microsoft application platform, I always realize that the final solution is composed of lots of products and technologies. Okay, so as you can see on this slide, BStork Server is just a module, it's just a component of the UL architecture. So this means that in order to successfully conduct a performance lab against a BStork application, you really need to optimize and tune the full stack of products from the ground up, starting from the operating system. So you need to optimize Windows Server for maximum performance. So coming up, you also need to tune the TCP/IP parameters and networking stuff for maximum performance. You need to optimize the .NET framework. For example, you need to increase the thread pool size used by the host processes. You also need to make sure to tune SQL Server for maximum performance, and not talking just of the SQL Server instances running your BStore databases, but if your application makes use also of custom databases, you should also optimize them. And coming up, other components are IIS, for example, which is always responsible for running your ASMX and WCF web services, and so forth. So just using this approach, that is, tuning the entire platform from the ground up, you can ensure that you will be able to optimize the entire solution for maximum performance and scalability, and not just the BStore part of the architecture, okay? So, as I said, this is just a very, very, very small portion of the optimization that we usually apply during a performance lab, okay? So at the end of the presentation, I will let you see the BStore performance optimization guide that we made for BStore 7 2006 R2. I can just announce right now that we are working to the new version. So our plan as a customer advisory team is to release the new version of the performance guide for BStore 7 2009 in June, maximum July. Okay, and in the same time frame, you can also expect the new version of the guide about BStore on Hyper-V. Okay, so we decided to release the new version of all the guides in a very close time frame. Okay, and this is a good news. So when we start a performance lab, obviously we start taking what is called a baseline. That is, we make a test before applying any kind of optimization. Then we start making optimization. We start typically from Windows Server, so we tune the operating system for best performance. Then we adjust TCP/IP parameters in the registry for maximum performance. Also networking parameters, the network cards parameters. We adjust IIS for best performance, not only ASP.NET, for example, the max connection parameter in the configuration file. If you are using any kind of SOAP samples or WCF HTTP-based samples, we usually separate the page file on a separate disk, apart from the one running the Windows operating system, stop unnecessary services like the print spooler or even IIS on the SQL Server boxes, because on the SQL Server boxes you are not expected to use IIS. And we make sure, this is very important, to store all the patches and hotfixes. Okay, this is usually very, very important. Let me give an example. There was a problem during a performance lab that we made in September. That was due to a new fix of the operating system that had a bad secondary effect on 64-bit host processes. So we released a hot fix to avoid the CPU to spike to 100%. Okay. So talking about Beanstalk Server, there are lots of optimization. So I just reported a few, and I completely I decided not to include all the suggestions and recommendations about orchestration, pipelines, coding best practices, and so forth. So just talking about Beanstalk Server, we adjust the .NET thread pool size, max IO thread, max worker thread, this stuff, for each host instance on each box. We typically split up the sending, receiving, processing, where processing stands for orchestrations, and tracking functionalities into multiple hosts. This is a good technique, you know that, in order to guarantee that each process has its own set of resources, like the .NET thread pool, CPU, memory, and so forth. And talking about low latency scenarios, we make sure to properly tune down the max receive interval. Again, this is just a small set of the optimization we make usually. It's important to pinpoint that the Beanstalk Server performance depends largely on SQL Server. Okay, so I'm not talking just about the performance of Beanstalk databases, but also of the performance of any custom database that is used by your Beanstalk solution. Okay, so you need to make sure to optimize those databases as well. Okay, so it's very, very important to have the right expertise during a performance lab in order to properly tune SQL Server for maximum performance. So what you can see on this slide are the most important, let's say, recommendations and advices. You can find the full set of recommendations inside the Beanstalk Performance Optimization Guide. So let's review these recommendations. The first one is very known by the community, and it's to isolate the data and transaction log files of the most used Beanstalk databases, so the MessageBox DB, the TrackingDB, and the bump primary import on dedicated volumes on a SAN. Okay, these techniques allows you to spread the IO contention on multiple volumes. Obviously, those volumes should not share physical spindles, because if you construct millions of volumes on the same physical spindle, you don't get any benefit. The second advice is to pre-allocate a large amount of space for the data and transaction log files of the same databases, and to properly set the autogrowth parameter to a large fixed value, let's say 100 megabyte, because you want to prevent the autogrowth of databases at runtime. In fact, when this event happens, typically Beanstalk needs to wait for the completion of this operation, so it remains stuck waiting, and this can have a very severe impact on performance. And again, this is a general purpose advice, so you should apply the same recommendation to your custom databases. Okay, so you should pre-allocate a large amount of space. Another good advice is to add multiple file groups and multiple data files to the TempDB. This is a general purpose or optimization that is not related to Beanstalk. The advice is to create a number of data files which equalize the number of cores on the SQL Server machine. So the optimal solution should be to place all these data files on separate volumes, but also placing all of them on the same volume, you can spread the IO contention of the TempDB on multiple files. Take into account that the TempDB is typically used by all the other databases for sorting and filtering data. So it's very important to make sure that you optimize this database as well. And the same technique can be extended to the message box. That is, you know, inside the message box there are a lot of tables that are very solicited, like the spool table, the parse table, the tables which represent the queues of the various hosts. So you can consider to split all these objects across multiple data files and to place those data files on separate volumes. Okay. We also provide a script for doing that in the performance guide. Another good advice is to scaling up the SQL Server machine, especially the one hosting the message box, and placing the rest of Bstock and custom databases on separate SQL Server instances. I give you another good reason for doing that. Remember that the SQL Server instance running the message box needs to have the maximum degree of parallelism set to 1. This is necessary for the message box, but it's not a condition that is necessary for the rest of the databases. So it's a good practice to move the rest of the databases on another SQL Server instance. Multiple message boxes. If you want to increase the scalability of your application, you can consider during a performance lab to try out this configuration, that is to create additional message boxes. And again, the advice in this case is to put the data and transaction log files for these additional databases on separate volumes. And the final advice, it's something that sometimes when I go on site, I found that is something that is, I don't know why, but sometimes when I go to make an architecture design review, I find that the DTA purge and archive job is unconfigured, is disabled, and when I use the SQL Server performance dashboard or I just look at the size of the data and transaction log file, I find typically find the tracking DB is huge. Okay, and for example, the message in-out events tables contains millions and millions of messages, something like years and years of messages. So this is a very simple advice. That is, you should configure the DTA purge and archive job to make sure that you spool out data from your tracking DB. So, as I said, you can find all these advices inside the Bstock Server Performance Optimization Guide. And as I said previously, we are going to publish a new version for Bstock Server 2009. So, let's start to talk about the methodology that my group, the Bstock Customer Advisory Team, usually apply during a performance lab. So the usual story, you know, everyone is aware that testing is very important for any kind of solution, not just Bstock solution. The problem is that testing, any kind of testing, not just performance testing, I'm talking about hand-to-hand, unit testing, smoke testing, every kind of testing is often neglected for time or budget reasons. Sometimes customers don't want to pay for performance labs. They think this is not strictly necessary, or, you know. So our strong advice is to invest your time and part of your budget in testing, okay? Because in my experience, when working with customers, partners, colleagues, is that the amount of time spent for performance testing tends to fall into two categories, okay? The first category, that is the wrong one, is that the worst one, is when performance testing is not done at all. Okay, so I could call this approach something like write your application, deploy your application, go live, and cross your finger, because that's the situation, okay? That is, you are not going to discover that your application will be able to sustain the expected load until you don't turn the key, okay? The second category is when performance testing is done at the end of the project lifecycle. So typically a few weeks before the go live date. And again, it's the same situation. I always see developers, architects, project managers, customers hoping in front, you know, of God, and they hope that the application is going to sustain the expected load and work as desired. Another common problem is when the performance testing is done in the wrong way. For example, the performance testing is done against an environment that doesn't match the production site characteristics. So, you are using a different hardware, you are using different adapters. I have seen also this, that is, we cannot connect to the back-end system, so we are going to simulate, and they are using different kinds of adapters. So indeed, in this case, you are testing a different application. You are not testing your application, you are testing something else, okay? So the problem is that solutions using Bistol tend to be mission and business critical, and they tolerate very little downtime. So you need to invest your time, invest your money also in a real performance testing, I think. And pure testing increases also the risk of your project in general. So the way to minimize the risk of your Bistol project is to follow throughout the development phase a consistent and strong testing strategy. So in our opinion, the best strategy, the best approach for doing that is to leverage a test framework like, for example, BizUnit. Okay? Because in this way, you can automate all the steps, not only of performance assessment, but also of functional testing, integration testing, any kind of testing you can see on this slide. So, as you know, there are several kinds of tests, okay, that you should implement in order to reduce the risk of your project and to make sure that the final solution works as desired, and more than that, that is able to sustain the expected load. Okay, so today we are not going to talk about all these testing categories. We are just going to talk about performance assessment. So the primary objective of this kind of the testing is to minimize, as I said, the risk profile of your project, to increase the quality of your application, your deliverables, your artifacts, and to minimize the amount of time spent for doing performance labs. Because again, if you use a test framework like BizUnit, you are able, okay, to run tests overnight. You can easily automate everything, okay? This is very, very important, in my opinion, when you plan to the application life cycle is very dynamic. That is, since you are connected to external systems, it happens that you need to change the XML schemas or the structure of the orchestrations. So you very often need to deploy a new version of a single component, a single orchestration. So in this case, it's very, very important to have an automatic testing strategy to be able to rapidly test a new version and deploy that into production. So let's see the methodology. We can consider a Bistol performance assessment like a sort of end-to-end process driven by very specific, well-defined performance goals in terms of scalability and latency. A typical performance lab occurs over a set period of time, usually 4 weeks. So the first week is to install the hardware. The second week is to install the software and install the application, and is also required to make some end-to-end functional tests to make sure that your test cases works properly. And the last 2 weeks are typically used for the execution phase of the performance lab. So during the scope phase that we will see in a moment, it's very, very important to staff the right people, the right individuals with the right skill sets to be able to properly tune the entire product stack that compose your solution. It's also important to involve expertise like, for example, MQ Series experts if your application is using some third-party software or messaging system. Okay, or for example, if your application interacts with a mainframe, okay, so you are using the adapters provided for host integration server, okay, or maybe you need also a SAP expert if you are using the WCF SAP adapter. Because this is very important, and this is up to the customer to provide the right expertise for any third-party software that is going to be used throughout the lab. And the last point is very, very important, okay, because, yes, the primary objective is to properly tune the application for maximum performance, but let me say that the secondary objective, okay, that it to me is equally important, is to make a knowledge transfer, is to put the customer in a good shape, in order to that the customer in the future will be able to reproduce and use the same testing strategy. We want them to be able to conduct a performance lab in an independent way. Okay, so just let me give you an example, and there's a Swedish example. Because in September we made a performance lab with Scandia in Redmond. It was, I think, a successful lab. But what I really appreciated, I was glad about that, okay, that they were able to reproduce exactly the same methodology, use exactly the same tools, and they were able to conduct the performance labs by their own and obtain, give or take, the same numbers. So I would like Martin to come here and to share his experience, because for us it's very, very important. Yeah. In Swedish.
Okay.
Or in Italian.
How long did I have? 5 minutes? Okej. Tjena, Martin Svensson heter jag. Jag kommer från Skandia. Och jag hade lovat min kollega att snubbla upp för trappan i och med att vi hade druckit ett öl här. Det skulle vara en storartad entré. Jag tänkte hoppa över. Vi har gjort en performance lab tillsammans med Paolo och ett antal andra personer från Microsoft i Redmond i USA. Och min bakgrund är lite grann att jag är Bistock-utvecklare sedan Bistock 2000. Hur många är inne och jobbar som Bistock-utvecklare? Anders? Ja, det var majoriteten. Hur många av er som sitter här som Bistock-utvecklare kan allting som Paolo kan med, som alla som berättar om? Man behöver tuna SQL Server. And then you have to, you know, redeploy all your SQL servers and the TempDB and blah, 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 blah. Det är rätt få som kan det. Jag fick uppdrag att börja performance-testa ett par tjänster väl på Skandia. Jag vill veta, liksom, vad har vi för möjlighet att svara på den här plattformen? Och jag börjar googla. Hur gör man de här performance-testar? Jag utvecklar det, jag vet inte riktigt. Hitta de här dokumenten som Paul beskrev, fast det var för ett par år sedan, så de var inte lika omfattande som är idag. Och det kanske var tur, för jag har ett guldfiskminne, så jag kommer aldrig ihåg någonting, men om jag får uppskatta så var dokumenten på 1000 sidor ungefär. Och nu ska du performance testa någonting, ta reda på hur du gör, googlar man 1000 sidor, ja, hur... Det smälter i allt det här då. Då måste jag lära mig allt om operativsystem. Jag måste lära mig allt om SQL Server. Jag är inte bra, jag vet inte. Jag måste lära mig allt om .NET. Jag måste lära mig allt om IIS. Jag måste lära mig allt om Bistock. Hur många här inne har den kompetensen? Inte så många. Det är rätt knepigt. Det vi gjorde då, det var att vi pratade med våra kontakter på Microsoft. Vi insåg att det här är någonting som man förmodligen behöver lära sig. Man behöver lära sig det av någon som kan. Man kan inte läsa allt det här och ta reda på exakt vad man ska göra. Det är rätt svårt. Så det är klart man kan. Alltså, vi ska ju försöka läsa och försöka ta till er, men det är rätt svårt att lära sig allt det här. Så att vi kontaktade Microsoft och vi fick hjälp av ett av Vistock Ranger i Redmond att göra sådana här labb. De hjälpte oss att ta och skopa uppdraget till att börja med. Det är rätt knepigt. Men när ni sitter som utvecklare och någon frågar hur pass bra går er tjänst, då kanske ni inte ska... Det är inte det som är frågan. Frågan är vilken last det är. Vilken last kan den här tjänsten klara av? Hur många samtidiga användare? Hur tunga transaktioner är det? Det är någonting man måste ha svar på för att kunna ta reda på hur pass bra din tjänst kommer att performa sen när du sätter den på. Det var någonting som fick oss att börja tänka själva på. Ja, det kanske är någonting som borde framgå väldigt tydligt i alla icke-funktionella krav. Hur många samtidiga användare och ungefär hur stora medierna pratar om. Eller hur? Annars är det svårt att börja... Alltså om man ska göra någon sån här, följa någon sån här metod, så måste man verkligen ha svart på vitt. Var är för någonting man försöker mäta? Så man inte bara börjar lasta på 10 miljarder användare samtidigt. Och hålla tummarna att det funkar. Men det var första grejen vi fick hjälp med. Det var att skopa. Vad är det vi ska testa för någonting? Så fick jag hjälp med. Hur ska vi testa det här? Hur ska vi få med oss det vi ska testa? För vi testade det inte i Stockholm. On-site i Stockholm. Utan vi tog med oss alla våra system till Redmond. Och det är inte så himla lätt att plocka med sig stordatorer, databaser på terabyte. Liksom. Det är rätt svårt att sippa, det är rätt svårt att installera. Nej, så att vi gjorde ett par strategiska överväganden. Vi får bygga mocktjänster. Vi kan inte plocka med oss allting. Vi får bygga mocktjänster istället som läser mot mindre temporära databaser som är så pass små eller stora så att vi kan plocka med oss dem. Men kompensera för det genom att ha mätt hur lång tid ungefär de här systemen performar hemma hos oss, on-site, hemma hos oss. Så att vi kan kompensera för det när vi kör mot mindre datakällor och ett mocktjänster. Så vi byggde in timers och allt i det. Sen fick vi hjälp med metodologi. Hur vi ska testa, hur vi bygger våra webbtester, loadtester, hur vi skalar dem med hjälp av Visual Studio Teams 2005 med lastgeneratorer. Och annan typ av mjukvara som inte är så himla lätt att få tag på. Hur många är det som har kört lasttester? Jobbat med lasttester någon gång? Det kan vara lite knepigt liksom att simulera den lasten. Att konfigurera de här verktygen att alstra den last som man förväntar sig. Som man förväntar sig ska motsvara en verklig last. Liksom. Och sen så kanske det beror på att sätta upp allting. Det var ju rätt snabbt gjort. Vi hade byggt om alla system hemma och vi hade provat hemma och deployat alla system på helt tomma servrar. Det har vi faktiskt tränat på. Men det var väl först när vi började exekvera våra lasttester, först när vi började optimera våra system som vi drog nytta av den kunskap som de här resurserna från Microsoft satt på. För de kunde ju allt det här som jag inte kan. Eller som majoriteten av oss inte kan. De kunde allt om operativsystemet. De kunde allt om nätverk. De hade all hårdvara på plats. Hade satt upp alla databaser. De vet hur man konfigurerar nya som maximum performance. Så de behövde inte läsa riktigt alla de här dokumenten. För de kunde ju väldigt mycket i huvudet. Och det är någonting som man tjänar tid på. För att om man ska göra en sån här performance-lab utan kunskap, då får man tillbringa mesta tiden av att läsa hur man ska göra, vad man ska skruva på. Eller? Så var det vårt i alla fall. Så vi körde över med ett team på 4-5 personer. Som några satt med DBA, några satt med nätverkskillarna, några satt med testkillarna. Och så lärde vi oss. Vi lärde oss hur de gjorde. Och vi lärde oss vad man ska titta på för performance counters när man kör etc. Sen åkte vi hem, satt på vår egen kammare och smälte den pucken lite. Sen har vi hållit på med ett rätt så stort projekt på Skandia. Och innan det gick i produktion så skaffade vi hårdvara. som vi satte. Och på den deployade vi motsvarande prylar som vi hade tagit med oss back till Microsoft. Vi hade tagit med oss alla de här mocktjänsterna och allt där. För att, jag menar, i produktion så är det så här, man kan inte lasta på alla bassystem hur mycket som helst. Eller när du kommer hem till Sverige, det kan vara massor med grejer som du inte får lasta på. Jag tog om sen det påverkar någonting annat eller så funkar det. Så vi hade med oss alla de mockningsgrejerna hem till Sverige, installera med vår miljö. Sen återupprepar vi allt där. Så då hade vi killen som hade suttit bredvid operativsystemskillen som optimerar operativsystemet på precis samma sätt. Vi hade med oss testkillen, det var jag, så att vi körde lasttesterna på precis samma sätt som vi gjorde där. Och vi hade några stycken som satt och kollade på performance-counter. Och efter varje runda vi körde försökte vi hitta flaskhalsen. Och när vi hittade flaskhalsen optimerade vi och körde vi igen. Så om man går så där, så man har nått ett resultat som man räknar. Och now I'm gonna do some commercial for Sova Software. And we have a guy from Sova Software in the audience today, and we have bought the system and we are using it in production right now. And when we were in Redmond, we were about, how many were we? 10, 12 guys at most?
Yes.
At the same time?
Yes.
Yeah. Sat around a large table and we started running. All the guys sat on their local machines watching the performance counters that they were interested in at the moment. But no one saw the overall picture. No one saw what the current load was at the moment and how every component worked together as a whole. But we monitored that with Sova Software. We used it to monitor all the traffic within the systems. So we saw the actual load at the moment. We saw in a graph how the system performed. And once we saw a peak, we had it displayed on a huge widescreen monitor or something. Once we saw a peak, the guy called out and said, "Well, now I have a peak." And one of the other guys said, "Yeah, it's me, it's on SQL Server, I see the performance counter here," or, "Yeah, it's me in the operating system, I have a lack of memory," or whatever. So, the performance guide, this performance lab that we did together with Microsoft was very useful, because it saved us to read thousands of slides of paper, understand it, and then turn it into reality. And I think it was great. Huh?
Thank you.
So I'm just going to make a couple of slides more, then we stop, right? Okay, and we continue later on. So in order to, before on the previous slide, we introduced some of the requirements. So in order to meet all these requirements and customer expectation, we usually follow a consistent and solid methodology that you can see depicted on this slide. So using this approach allows us to successfully deliver an end-to-end engagement which is able to meet customer expectations and performance goals. As you can see, this methodology is composed of five different phases, and each of these stages has a different role and a different set of deliverables. So let's start from the first one, which is the scope phase. So you need to bear in mind that a successful performance lab starts way before the execution phase. The first phases of a performance lab are very, very important, because during this stage, you need to agree with the customer, the partners, everyone is involved in the performance lab. You need to agree upon objectives. performance goal, success criteria, deliverables, guidelines, any constraints, okay? And you need to document all this stuff, okay? Because you don't want to have any confusion. You want to avoid misunderstanding and discussions later on. So it's unfortunate, this phase, the scope phase, it's something that is often overlooked and underestimated. You need to take into account that only allocating beforehand sufficient resources and time, the team that is responsible for the performance lab will be able to accomplish all the activities that are necessary, first of all, to build a production-like environment, and secondly, to test a very complex application, okay? So again, you need to, during this phase, you need to decide what's in scope and what is not. You need to take some decision that are very important. What are the scenarios you are going to test? I mean, if you listen to your customers, sometimes they would like to test the entire application. Obviously, it's not possible. You need to find inside your application some test cases which represent better than others the most commonly used design pattern or flaws inside your application. Okay, so you need to nominate and choose maximum 3-4 because it's not realistic to run, for example, 10 use cases in just 2 weeks. Okay, then you need to specify what kind of technologies are you going to use. Do you want to simulate external systems? Do you want to use real backend systems? Okay. What are the SAN requirements? For example, the right level for each volume. What is the size of the allocation block for each volume? This kind of stuff. You need also to count the volumes you need. Okay, you will see that in a moment. Usually we communicate this stuff with a spreadsheet where we specify the characteristics of each node and we specify the characteristics of each volume that we want to use on a SAN. Then another decision that you need to take in this phase, are you going to use an operating system that is 32-bit or 64-bit? Other requirements, you will see that in a moment about throughput and latency. And again, you need to document all this information because you want to avoid discussion later on. And staff the right people. Again, usually when we make a performance lab, we involve a SQL expert from PFE. His name is Ben Cooper. He's a UK guy. And we also involve guys like Ricardo Torre from PFE in Portugal. Okay, he's a bespoke engineer because we want to make a knowledge transfer and because we want to broaden, okay, the amount of people that is able to conduct successfully a performance lab. Okay, so during the scope phase, typically Microsoft people and customer stakeholders need to come together and collaborate, work in close contact to define what are the performance goals expressed in terms of scalability and latency. Because if you don't express in this phase your success criteria, how can you say at the end of the lab if the lab was successful or not? You need to define measurable objectives in this phase. So in this phase, it's very important also to establish a metrics. And also the performance counters that you are going to use throughout the lab to measure the throughput and the latency. It's also important to specify, to very clearly define roles and responsibilities in this phase, because otherwise you are going to discuss who is going to do what. So just to give an example, a typical activity that is up to the customer is to create the test cases. And another activity is to create an automated deployment, because we don't want the customer to come on site and just compile stuff inside Visual Studio. We want the customer to be able to come on the test environment and deploy the application in an automated way and be able also to deploy every custom component that is going to be used in order to, for example, to simulate external systems. In this phase also is important to define all the deliverables that should be produced before embarking in the following phases and what kind of documents you want to use throughout the lab. So a good example, a good practice is to send out an email at the end of each working day, to each stakeholders to properly communicate the actual state of the engagement. So just to give an example, we want to summarize the results that were achieved that day, problems that are still open, or, for example, all the activities that were completed, and we also want to use this email to communicate the plan for the day after. During the scope phase, it's also important to define any constraints. So let me give an example from a performance lab. Bank Austria, 1 year ago, wanted to start the performance lab using two nodes, two Bistel nodes, okay, a SQL cluster composed by two nodes, and an M2 series machine, just because this is the typical configuration they have in a small subsidiary, in a European Eastern country. But they also wanted to be able to scale out later on in the second phase of the performance lab, because they wanted to see, to measure how the application was able to react in case they had to grow the environment because of to sustain, for example, future levels of workload. Okay, so during the scope phase, we decided to install not just two nodes, but six nodes, because it's very impractical to stop lab to install additional stuff, okay? Additional Bistel nodes, additional SQL node, and so forth. So you need to establish in this phase everything you will need, even in a second phase of the performance lab. For example, we also decided to start with a single WebSphere MQ manager, but we wanted also to scale out this component, not just Bistel, but also MQ series, just splitting the incoming queues on one WebSphere MQ Manager machine and the outgoing queues on another machine. Okay, so just to give an example, when we used two nodes, the MQ Manager was absolutely able to sustain the load. When we scale out to six Bistel nodes, the bottleneck was the MQ Series machine. Okay, so we were not able to achieve more than 100 messages per second with six nodes, because the CPU on the MQ manager machine was completely maxed out. So at that moment, since we planned during the scope phase to install at least two MQ manager machines, we were able in just 1 hour, half an hour, to move some of the queues on the secondary node. And just doing that, we boosted the performance from 100 messages per second to 140 messages per second. That is 40% more in terms of scalability. Another thing that you need to plan during this phase is the topology of your network. That is, are you going to use a single network? Are you going to use separate networks? For example, we usually recommend to install at least two network cards on Bistel machines, because we want to separate the traffic between Bistock and the rest of the world, for example, MQ Series, web services, and so forth, from the traffic between Bistock and SQL. So we always suggest to use at least two network segments. But again, these kind of decisions must be taken during this phase, because it's impractical, it's unrealistic to stop a performance lab in order to change the network topology. Okay, so one more slide. This is a typical sample of performance goals. So in this case, we had a couple of test cases, very, very complete, very different from each other. In the first case, the performance goal in terms of throughput was to achieve at least 50 messages per second sustainable. Sustainable means that you could go on forever submitting messages and the application will be able to sustain this traffic load. And you can easily see this because there is a counter, you know that is the spool size that is provided by Bistock and should be like this, okay, flat, like something like this, not completely flat, but inside the range, okay? Talking about latency, this is a typical, if you want, service level agreement, that is the response time should be less than 2 seconds for 90% of your messages, and less than 5 seconds for 95% and less than 10 seconds for 99% of all messages. In the case of test case number 2, we don't have any latency requirement, okay? For example, this could be a batch procedure. The only performance goal that we have is in terms of throughput, that is, the application should be able to process successfully 3.6 million messages within 8 hours, okay? So it's important that from the very beginning you define such performance goals, because again, otherwise at the end of the performance lab, you cannot say that the performance lab was successful or not. Okay, yes, last slide for the scope phase when we stop. During the scope phase, you should also document very carefully all the test cases that you are going to use throughout the lab. So in this case, what you are seeing right now is a graph that was done for the Bank Austria Performance Lab. So as you can see on this chart, we very carefully specified all the artifacts, not just pistol artifacts like receive location, the adapters that we are going to use, are we going to use maps on the receive location or send ports, but we also specified also the incoming and outgoing queues on WebSphere MQ series. Okay. Then another important thing that you need to specify in this phase is in infrastructure design. This is very useful because sometimes you are not going to store this stuff by yourself. You need to communicate this stuff to someone else, and someone else is going to be responsible for building out your lab. So you need to communicate this stuff in a very efficient and very detailed way. Okay? So as you can see from the very beginning, we planned at point one to use, as I said, 2 MQ series machines. We started with one, and then when we scale out, we use both machines. At point two, as you can see, we have 6 Bistol nodes. We started using just 2 nodes, and then we scale out to 6 nodes. At point three, this is another very important thing, test agents. Okay, so sometimes you can use Visual Studio Testing Edition, the load agent component, in order to generate load against, for example, SOAP and WCF receive locations. It's very important, okay, to spread this task across multiple machines, because otherwise the risk is that when you scale out to, for example, this case, 6 nodes, the machine which is responsible for generating the load is becoming the bottleneck. Okay? This can happen. Okay, so another very important thing to pinpoint, lastly, the number of SQL Server machines. As you can see, we didn't have a single SQL Server instance. We decided to use 3 SQL Server 2005 and 1 SQL Server 2000 because they had a custom database that was utilized by one of the test cases. Okay, so it's very important to define this stuff. And as I said before, I'm not asking you to read this spreadsheet, but I wanted to include this to let you understand it is very, very important to express in a very detailed way all the characteristics for each machine in terms of CPU type, the number of cores, the architecture, or the number of gigabytes of RAM, how many network cards you are going to store, and you don't see that on this slide, but we made a similar spreadsheet in order to properly communicate all the volumes on the SAN with all the characteristics in terms of write level, the size of the allocation block, and also what kind of data and transaction log files we wanted to install on each volume. Okay, so we can stop here. We continue afterwards.